Well, a couple of things before we get to what we're going to talk about today. We will, in 2 weeks, talk to Carl Subban and Angie Abdu. I'm just almost through Carl's incredible memoir of raising PK, Malcolm, and Jordan, and his unbelievably inspiring story of leaving Jamaica at age 12, moving to Sudbury, Ontario, and suddenly becoming a winter guy in his 30-some years as an educator, and mostly in Toronto. So I'm really excited about that because I want people, the book is called, by Carl Subban, and I'll give you the title in a minute, How We Did It, The Subban Plan for Success. And we had talked about Angie's book, Home Ice, about her struggles with the way youth hockey is conducted. So we'll have both of them on. What we're going to talk about today is something that has become near and dear to my heart recently, because I'm like, I think a lot of writers, really struggling with what constitutes cultural appropriation, what constitutes looking at another culture and writing about it. And so from the book that we've talked about, two articles from before, this will be the last one we'll talk about, Overcoming the Neutral Zone Trap, Hockey Agents of Change. This is by a woman named Victoria Parashak, who goes by Vicky Parashak, who has over 75 peer-reviewed articles, most of which have to do with Indigenous sports and Indigenous people in sports in Canada. I was drawn to this because there are a number of novels that have Indigenous hockey players in them. And I've read a lot recently about the struggles of Indigenous players. And we talked about Fred Mason's article on Len Cody's antagonist and Lemire's Roughneck last week. So I thought I would look at an article that took a scholarly approach, but it's written in a way that it's really accessible, on what is the narrative and who gets to write it. And what Parashak started with is, back in 2008, Canada formed a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I want to read their exact mission so I get it right. We call upon all levels of government, in collaboration with Aboriginal peoples, sports halls of fame, and other relevant organizations, to provide public education that tells the national story of Aboriginal athletes in history. So what Parashak does is look at documentaries about Indigenous hockey players, looks at memoirs and the like, but also looks at fiction and the way that in fiction various Aboriginal people have been portrayed. And what it is she calls it survivance, a way of, and the definition of that is that it's an active sense of presence, the continuance of Native stories, not a mere reaction. So it's not looking at how things worked out, but what are the narrative stories that so many Native people have? Now, when I was a kid, one of my all-time favorite hockey players was Jim Nielsen, big defenseman, played for the Rangers and later for other teams. He was raised on a reserve in part, and he was called Chief. Everybody called him Chief Nielsen. As he said, he didn't in the NHL, it didn't bother him, but growing up, always being called Chief or having kids make tomahawk signs and the like was annoying. But it turns out that a lot of the Indigenous players dealt with a lot of that coming up, that they were assumed to be better fighters and more of enforcers and perhaps less skilled otherwise, which was not in fact true. So what she does in this, and I really like this article a lot, was she brought out a couple of trends that are really, it's important to look at. And that is, we have talked over and over again, way back when we first looked at the Bill Spunska stories written by Neil Young's father, through all the hockey literature we've looked at, how for immigrants, hockey in Canada is what baseball was in the 1920s, 30s for immigrants to the United States. When you learned the game of baseball, when you understood it, when you could play it, when you could go to a game and understand the rules, you were there then able to call yourself an American. You had become part of American culture. And we've looked at two books over the course of the last 7 or 8 years that dealt with how important it was to Italian Americans, to Irish Americans, when they came here in large numbers as part of their assimilation. But the thing is, the native people were there to begin with, and their contributions to hockey, therefore, were to an immigrant's game, not immigrants coming to a game. I mean, baseball has some roots in England, but baseball is an American game, and the scholars who don't think that's true can just go pound sand. There was rounders, or there were other games, but hockey is clearly a game that is invented in Canada in the form that in all the forms it's had that we know. And two peoples that have contributed greatly were black people in Nova Scotia who had come with loyalists during the American Revolution and had the National Colored Hockey League of Canada, and indigenous people who took up the game for the same reason immigrants in America took up baseball. They would be felt more Canadian. Now, we have to remember that, unfortunately, many of them learned to skate at residential schools, having been taken from their homes. And the horror show of that is why the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions began. And then we did also talk in the past about Richard Wagamese's novel, Indian Horse, which is a fictional account of Saul Indian Horse, who is taken to a residential school, and hockey is sort of becomes one of his defining traits. But it's easy to forget the indigenous people because they've always been in hockey, but no one ever said, oh, who's the first black person to play in the NHL? We know Willie O'Ree. If I ask you who the first black person to play, indigenous person enrolled on a reservation to play, you might not get it. You know, just for the record, it's Fred Sasakamoose, excuse me. They've been sort of forgotten in the fold, and what this does is try to let the natives people tell their stories their way, not as victims, but through survivors as people that have achieved something. It's a really good article. I enjoyed it a lot.
Excellent. We've got some great stuff coming up, but you touched on Carl Subban, also a special guest next week.
Yeah, Reg Lansbury, who was here with us for 9 goals. We still have one of his mugs here where we keep our pens and highlighters. He noticed a little while ago, right before the pandemic hit, that there were a lot of hockey teams hadn't retired anybody's number or had retired very few, and there were a lot of people whose numbers hadn't been retired. He's got an article coming out in the Hockey News about that, and it's funny because once the buzz got around that he wrote this article, all kinds of people started getting ready to retire numbers. So we'll talk to Reg, who's always a delight to talk to, next week, and then we'll talk to Carl Subban and Angie the week after that.
Sports Lit 101 coming up here on Downtown this afternoon. Some hockey talk. When we come back in just a few minutes, we'll talk with the head coach of the Maine women's hockey team, Rick Reichenbach, co-head coach, and later Ben Barr from the Maine men's team. Both of them with some very big games this weekend.
Yeah, they do. The women need to get some points at Providence because they can move. They could get a home playoff. It's possible. It's going to be tough, especially with kids in the Olympics, but it's going to be tough.